Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. The rapid development that's fueled China's economic boom has also created huge environmental and health problems, like lead poisoning, especially in children. China is the world's top consumer and producer of lead. The Chinese government has acknowledged the problem, but they're not getting children the treatment they need. Government officials in provinces with high rates of contamination block children from getting accurate test results or proper treatment and send them back into polluted villages. Parents and journalists seeking information about the problem are often intimidated and harassed. Dr. Joe Amon is the head of the Health and Human Rights Program at Human Rights Watch. We'll talk to him today about a new report from Human Rights Watch about lead poisoning in China. And we'll also speak with Dr. Mary Jean Brown. She's the chief of the Lead Poisoning and Prevention Program at the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. Joe, we'll start with you. What are we seeing in China? I mean, we've known about lead poisoning there for some time, but in this report, what did Human Rights Watch find in these villages?
Well, we went to four provinces, and in those provinces, we went to, you know, largely rural areas that had industrial factories and talked with families whose kids were sick. Oftentimes, they didn't know why they were sick. They were just struggling. They were not eating well. They weren't gaining weight. Sometimes, if they were young, they weren't walking or talking, developmentally delayed. And what we started exploring was the cause of that sickness, which was lead poisoning. And some of the kids had been tested. Sometimes the results hadn't been returned to their families, even though the families had asked for the results. Sometimes the results were within the normal range for China, but elevated according to international standards. And then when the families went and got additional tests, they found that the results were even much higher than they were initially told. But across the board, there was no treatment being provided. And that's the real challenge. The Chinese government has increasingly looked at the environmental consequences of this pollution. There's sometimes been factories that have been shut down. There's sometimes been actions to address the environmental consequences. But really, there is no treatment being provided for kids, and their ongoing exposure to lead is going to cause lifelong disabilities.
So where is the pollution coming from in the provinces that you looked at?
Well, these houses are often just all around the factory, and these are factories that are producing lead, that are producing batteries, recycling lead, and it's getting into the air, it's getting into the soil, into the households as parents who work in these factories come home every day with lead on their clothing. The households are right next to the factories, and it's difficult for the families to know what to do. They aren't able to move. They don't have the resources to move. Oftentimes, if they are working in the factory, they're tied to that community. Even if their children are very, very sick, they're not always able to afford health care. In some cases, the governments have recognized that there's a problem and have encouraged families to send their children to schools in neighboring villages that aren't as contaminated. But at the end of the day, they come home. They sleep in the households. They wake up in the same households. They continue to be exposed to lead. It's a difficult problem. This isn't something that can be solved easily or solved with, you know, a simple remedy. But the Chinese government has really failed to put in place a process of actually evaluating how extensive the problem is and ensuring that people get basic steps to care. One of the things that we found was that families were being told there's nothing that can be done, or try and give your child some more milk or garlic. And the families that we spoke to were really confused. They were devastated. They had sick children on their hands, and they didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I saw that in the report, milk, garlic, eat more vegetables. Dr. Mary Jean Brown at the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. Dr. Brown, is there any merit to that? Does that help?
There is no merit to that at the blood lead levels that I suspect that are occurring in these situations. We know that children who are hungry, children who have iron deficiency or who have low calcium intake, absorb lead through their gastrointestinal tract much more efficiently than other children. But that's when we're talking about blood lead levels of 5 or 10 micrograms per deciliter. Once you get into a situation where you have a child with a blood lead level of 60 or 70 micrograms per deciliter, you've overwhelmed all of those systems. And milk or garlic or I've also heard blueberries really is not an effective intervention. The most effective intervention is to stop the exposure. And the second treatment then would be chelation therapy for those children whose blood lead levels are high enough that they might benefit from it.
And are there ways that governments can act quickly to prevent and to treat lead poisoning, especially in children?
Let's start with what some of the symptoms are. As Dr. Amon pointed out, children with lead poisoning can often have kind of symptoms that don't really predict anything, you know, this kind of crabby, kind of tired, maybe not eating well. Most of these children will be between the ages of 1 and 5, and these kinds of symptoms are common among these kids. So the first thing to know what's going on with the children is to have a blood lead test, right? And the blood lead test will tell us then what needs to happen next.
For Joe, what's going on in China is that parents aren't even able to figure out if it's lead that's making their kids sick or what the actual level of lead is in their blood. That must be so frustrating for these parents.
That's right. Some of these parents have been turned away from hospitals. In fact, a busload of parents going to the hospital with their kids to be tested were turned away from the hospital by the police. In other cases, they were told that they weren't eligible for free testing because they lived too far from the smokestack. The government had defined an arbitrary 1 kilometer radius from the smokestack to be able to be tested. So in many cases, there's no real information being provided about what lead poisoning is or what the threat of lead is. And then on top of that, when parents are trying to find out what's wrong with their kids, they're not able to get the information about what the blood lead level of their children are. I think one of the important things here, too, is that, you know, thinking about treatment in the absence of changing the environment is not going to be successful. And so whether a child has lead levels high enough for chelation therapy or whether they just have prolonged, long-term exposure to lead, there's not a solution unless you start addressing the environment.
And that's a very important point. In fact, there are, depending on the chelating agents, you could do more harm than good if you chelate children and while they're living in a contaminated environment or to return them to the contamination. This is not a car wash. You can't get exposed to lead and then the chelating agent washes all the lead out and then you can go back and get exposed again.
Well, what about abatement or cleaning up the lead, both in people's homes and actually changing these factories? Is that happening?
Well, China definitely is starting to address the environment. There's more regulations. There's more laws. Enforcement is not as good. Occasionally, particularly when there have been large mass poisonings, and that's been seen increasingly in a number of villages throughout the country, that there have been, you know, whole villages that are really exposed to acute lead poisoning. There have been some consequences. Factories have been shut down. They've started to talk about criminal penalties and fines for factory owners. But, you know, the more typical story is that there's a slow acknowledgement of the environmental consequence, but almost no action on actually addressing the harm that's been done.
It sounds like Human Rights Watch spoke to a bunch of parents who really are sort of becoming activists on this or are really trying to fight for their children. What are they up against?
Especially right now with the repression that the Chinese government is showing towards any and all activism, they're up against a very, very hard struggle. There have been protests outside of these factories that have been shut down by the police. There have been environmental activists that have disappeared and are presumed to be behind bars in prisons. Many of these parents are really afraid to speak out because they're caring for sick kids and because they don't want anything special They just want their kids to be treated. They want to have some sense of justice being done. And that might mean getting some resources to move to a place that's less polluted or less contaminated.
So the government is saying, we know we have, I mean, they've spoken a lot about this, about the environment being an issue, knowing that this is part of their economic development plan. And yet, in these provinces, people just aren't seeing that kind of regulation.
There's a tension between the regulations and the enforcement, and the enforcement at the local level is lacking. And part of that is local government officials are responsible for delivering economic growth and economic results. They're not responsible always for protecting the health and the environment of the people in their districts. There's also real problems with close relationships between government officials and factory owners. And that makes it difficult to, you know, take a strong tack against polluting factories.
Dr. Brown, what can we learn, I guess, from, you know, from history about lead poisoning and prevention? Where and how has this problem been, I guess, conquered or dealt with effectively?
Well, I wouldn't say that we've conquered it in the United States, but we have made vast strides in preventing childhood lead poisoning over the last 50 years. So between 1900 and 1950, blood lead levels in the United States rose, and they rose quite high levels. 88% of children in 1978 would meet the current CDC definition for lead poisoning. This year, it's less than 1% of children would meet that definition. And the way that that happened was that there was regulatory policies that were put into place and enforced that controlled or eliminated lead exposures in the environment. So leaded gasoline was banned. The Safe Drinking Water Act reduced lead in drinking water quite remarkably. The Title 10 that reduced lead paint hazards in housing by 40% between 1991 and 2000. We have banned the residential use of lead in paint and continue to identify and figure out ways to control or eliminate lead sources in children's environments before they're exposed. And that is the only way.
And let me just add that, you know, I think it's quite clear that the economic growth in China has lifted millions of people out of poverty and delivered, you know, better health to many. But the struggle is to make sure that economic growth isn't at the expense of the environment or health or human rights. And I think that activists, parents, play a critical role in raising concerns and raising red flags about problems that need to be addressed and need to be solved. And in the environment of crackdowns against that kind of free speech, and journalists as well have been chased out of these towns and have been censored from reporting on these issues, it becomes that much more difficult to get ahead of the curve to address these problems before they become truly massive. And with lead poisoning, you're not talking about short term. You're talking about lifelong disability and lifelong costs that will really weigh on China's ability to continue to grow as a nation.
That was Joe Amon, director of the Health and Human Rights Program at Human Rights Watch. We also spoke with Dr. Mary Jean Brown, chief of the Lead Poisoning Prevention Program at the CDC. You can read the full report called My Children Have Been Poisoned on the Human Rights Watch website. That's hrw.org. And that's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about Human Rights Watch, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. You can also find us on Facebook. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or check us out on Broadcaster. That's a new website for mapping audio around the world. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.